either one. Usually it's just an audio call. You know, time to time, if we have something we want to share on the screen, we can do that too. So, welcome guys for joining us this morning. This is Matt Kuhn. I'm the National Sales Director with Pacesetter Advantage. Most of you on here I've talked with multiple times, but I do see we've got some newer agents that have joined us for the first time. So just kind of a heads up on our conference calls. It's always an open forum to discuss any and everything that's on your mind, you know, whether it's leads or appointment setting or presentation scripts, objections, how you track your business, how you track expenses, whatever it is. I mean, there's nothing that's off limits. So we encourage you to ask questions, to interact, to give your thoughts on different things, because that's a more productive call for everybody. And if you have a question on something, please don't hesitate to ask and bring it up, because if you've got that question, then chances are somebody else on the call is probably wondering the same thing. So a lot of times I ramble on when I get on a subject and I don't take a breath and don't pause for expanded lengths of time. Don't ever hesitate to interrupt me. If you want me to repeat something, ask a question on something, insert your own thoughts on it, by all means. You won't hurt my feelings, so feel free to interrupt me at any time. So, Jerry Myrick, owner of Pacesetter, is on with us also this morning. So Jerry was going to introduce himself and had a little bit to share before we continued on. Jerry?
Yeah, thank you, Matt. Welcome, everyone. Really appreciate you being on our conference calls. Never participated in a bad one. Matt does a unique and special job of putting these on, and more or less I just listen, where I am bound to learn something from someone. The one thing that I just wanted to do today was share some truism, actually. I got an email from a friend of mine who has way too much time on his hands, because he sends me about three a day. And I thought this one really, in a way, fits what we're about in the business. And this was about a 4,000 baseball coaches at a American Baseball Association convention, and the guest speaker was an old fella, even actually older than I am, and he had a home plate hanging around his neck, he was speaking for a while, and everybody was wondering, why does he have that home plate hanging around his neck? And finally he turned it around. And he asked the question, little league coaches, how wide is home plate? And there was considerable pause. And then finally one of them said questioningly, 17 inches. That's right. High school coaches, how wide's home plate in high school? After a short pause, one of them said questioningly, 17 inches. That's right. College coaches, how wide's home plate in college? One of them said, 17 inches. That's right. And he said, in minor league ball, 17 inches. Major league ball, 17 inches. And the correlation that I drew from this is connected to lead production and agents working leads, consistently working leads. It's like the home plate is always 17 inches. You always have to have a lead flow, and hopefully it's more than 17 leads a week. Because the fact is, our large producers work 20, 25, 30, 35 leads a week. And consistently, just like the 17 inches wide that the baseball plate is. So that's what I wanted to just say to you, is get into a very measurable, consistent lead flow, and your production will grow and grow. We not only have the good fortune of paying high first-year commissions, your renewal commissions are going to be excellent as well. I know that doesn't mean a whole lot to people who are just getting into the business with us, but 2 years from now, you're really going to start appreciating your renewal commissions. The more first-year commissions you have, the larger your renewal commissions are going to be. So if you will evaluate what your lead flow is and what your production can become out of whatever lead flow you have, maybe you want to adjust your sights up a little bit, or maybe a lot. Anyway, that's my part of this today, and I appreciate, again, that you guys are with us today.
Yep. Well, thank you, Jerry. Yeah, I completely agree with that. Consistency is the name of the game, without a doubt. I mean, direct mail, as far as final expenses, has always been the tried and true method. You know, the battle has always been for agents to make sure they have direct mail, they have fresh leads each and every week. So once you can get that down, if you got fresh direct mail every week, it turns into a numbers game. Even if you're not the best salesman, even if you're not, you know, a guy that goes out and works his tail off. I mean, if you just have fresh direct mail and you make sure you get in front of each and every one of them, then the numbers are going to work out to where, you know, you sustain your business. Now, you might not be as profitable and have a high as return of investment as a guy who's out, you know, busting butt and running more leads, or the guy that's an excellent closer and, you know, super comfortable sitting at the kitchen table, but you're still going to make it work if you just get in front of each and every one of them. So I always kind of look at it as, you know, when you get a stack of leads, you know, say you have 20 leads, you know, out of those 20, you probably got four of them that are going to buy whatever you got. And I don't care if you're going with a burial policy, if you are selling them a vacuum cleaner, if you are selling encyclopedias, they're just ready to buy whatever it is. You know, they're happy to see you. You open the door and say, well, I was waiting for you to get here. So four of those are like that. Then, you know, on the other end of that spectrum, you know, out of those 20 leads, you've probably got about 12 of them that just aren't buying. You know, you sat down and gave them an excellent presentation. Maybe they need it. Maybe they don't, whatever it is, but they're not buying. They're not being closed by anybody. And then, you know, so you've got another four leads left over after that, four or five leads that you need to be a salesman on. You've got to sit down. You've got to put your best foot forward. You've got to give a good presentation. You've got to show them why they need it. Show them that you have the solution they need. Show them that it's going to fit in their budget. And so those people in the middle, you got to win over. So, like I said, if you just go out and get in front of everybody, those first four, anybody's going to sell. And then you start to hone your skills and get better at what you do and pick up those additional sales out of there. You know, that's when you turn from, you know, just making it work and having a job to, you know, creating something for the long term and getting to the income you want to be at. So, but yeah, just like Jerry said, that consistent lead flow, everything else is really details after that. Because I don't care how good you are, how hard of a worker you are, or how good your presentation is, or that you can sell ice cream to an Eskimo. If you ain't got the leads, then you're not going to have the opportunity to do that. So, and it's, you know, it's really to the point where we debate even offering a contract to somebody that's not committed to the lead program, because it is it's not a fine line. It's a great divide between the guys that are on the lead program having a consistent lead flow and then the guys that aren't on it for whatever reason. They think they're going to reinvent the wheel and do it their own way. They think they're going to find a cheaper marketing method. I mean, it is a great divide. And so, like I said, it's debatable if it's even worth giving a carrier contract to somebody that's not on the lead program, because 9 times out of 10, it's not going to amount to any kind of production at all. They're just not, it's simply not. So, like I said, being on a regular lead flow is extra, extra important. So, that being said, I'd like to open it up and see what kind of questions, concerns, anything that anybody wants to talk about, specifics and underwriting, carriers, presentations, appointment settings. Anybody have anything they'd like to throw out for the peanut gallery?
I have a question. I have a question on underwriting.
Yes, sir.
In the case of heart attacks, somebody's had a heart attack. Is there a certain period of time when you know they will not be underwritten, or in the case of heart attack or even cancer, how's that handled?
Yeah, and is that Kurt?
No, that's Greg.
Oh, hi, Greg. I'm sorry. Yeah, so what we have, you know, all of our carriers are different as far as underwriting goes, and I will send out to you, we have a field underwriting guide that's put together that encompasses our different carriers and then how they each treat each individual health question. So, for instance, the Americo Eagle product, it has a one-year look back on heart attack. Period. So if your heart attack was over 12 months ago, you qualify for preferred just fine. Less than 12 months ago, so you had a heart attack 11 months ago, you're declined. You can't get that product. Now, all of our carriers are different in that. What's kind of more standard, a two-year look back is kind of the more standard final expense product. Most of them are going to look like, you know, in the past 2 years. Now, that being said, most carriers don't have a just accept decline based on that 2 years. And most of them will have, if you've had a heart attack in the past 2 years, you're going to qualify for a graded product. And then if it was over 2 years ago, you can get back to the level or the preferred. But I'll get that field underwriting guide out to you, and it makes a lot more sense once you look at that. But when you come in to ride with me, we'll go over all that too, as far as the different carriers and how they treat different health conditions.
Okay.
And I'll throw this out there too. You know, our training website, if I haven't sent that out to you, if you go to our website, pacesetteradvantage.com/training, all that material, that field underwriting guide, all of our training stuff is on there. There's a little button you click on that says online training, and there's it's password protected, but the password is just agent-training. I'll repeat that again at the end of the call here. So everybody, if you want to write that down, but all of our stuff, the field underwriting guide, presentations, scripts, recordings, it's all on the website there. So anybody else?
Hey, Matt.
Yep.
I'd like to remind everyone, especially the newer folks, that getting on that website, listening to your actual sales presentation is something that they can do as many times as they want, and keep it fresh in their mind till it becomes second nature to them. And the same thing with the appointment setting audio. Those who are going to set appointments, I would definitely recommend you listen to that and listen to that and listen to that, because it'll boost your success rate at setting appointments for sure.
Yep, and like I said, that's all on there, and you can log on and listen to it at any time. So if nobody else has anything they want to bring up, I would like to just kind of get into kitchen table stuff, sales presentations, presenting the product, presenting the problem, or the problem and the product, and all that. You know, everybody finds out what works for them as far as how their presentation is and how they go about it. And like I said, when you find something that works for you, then by all means, you know, run with it. I know my presentation that I've done has been very consistent for the past 17 years. It's changed very, very little. And that being said, you know, it is the exact same thing that comes out of my mouth. It's just repeated over and over. And you guys that have been to Kansas City and have rode with me out in the field, you know that, you know, from one house to the next, it's like the exact same thing being repeated over and over. So, and that's, I found something that worked for me, and I, you know, there's no reason to change it if it's not broke. But my presentation really kind of just devised as a hybrid of two guys that I'd trained with years ago when I had first started. And, you know, your guys' presentation will kind of be the same thing. You'll pick it up different pieces from here and there and find out what works for you. But also share some of my presentation with you. Again, it's not to say that you have to do it that way. But I actually enjoy when we get into these kinds of topics on our conference call, because I learn something every time. You know, even if it's a guy that just started and has been selling final expense for a month, just getting somebody else's perspective on it and what their thoughts are on it, I learn something all the time. So, I suppose, you know, from the beginning on the presentation wise, you know, the biggest thing is finding the hot button, finding out why you're there and what their thoughts are. A common approach to this, for folks is to, some people call it a three reasons, some people call it a four reasons, but what a lot of guys will sit down and say, you know, they've warmed up to the client, they sit down, they have the direct mail lead piece in front of them. Now, Mrs. Smith, you know, we found that there's three different reasons that people send these cards in to us. The first is they don't have anything in place for their funeral expenses, and they're extremely worried about how their kids would cover that when they pass. They want to get a burial policy to take care of that. The second reason is they have some coverage for their burial expenses, but either one, they don't think it's enough, so they want to add some additional coverage to it, or two, they think they're paying too much for that coverage and they want to see if they can find something cheaper. And the third reason is that their funeral expenses are all taken care of, but they want to leave an extra cash benefit behind for their family when they pass, either to their kids or their grandkids or to the church or their favorite charity. So it's not the funeral expenses that worries them, but they want to leave a benefit for someone else. Now, Mrs. Smith, what's the reason that you had sent the card in? Okay. Now, so that is one approach that a lot of guys subscribe to. I don't like that approach myself, but I'm throwing it out there because maybe it's something that'll work for you. The reason I don't like that approach is because I don't really like asking what's the reason you sent the card in. You know, that's something that a lot of guys do in a lot of different ways, but in my mind, because I've tried it, I mean, I test everything. Whenever I have a idea, I always try it out. But I mean, what I don't like about asking the question, what is the reason you'd sent the card in, is it opens that prospect up to saying, I just wanted information. So it gives them a window to say, you know, I just wanted information. Or it gives them a window to say, I didn't know what it was. I just wanted to see what it was. Okay, so I don't like giving that opening to somebody. My approach, as far as, you know, finding the reason they send it in, is to just figure out where they're at right now. Well, I want to try to come to that same conclusion of why they'd send it in without directly asking, why did you send it in? Because I don't want to give them that window, that easy out. So what I do when I first thing, I get set down at a table, you know, my warm-up period is a maximum of 5 minutes. That would be a long warm-up period. Usually it's about 45 seconds. You know, once I walk into a house, I'll make a comment about a picture of the grandkids or the odd looking vase that's sitting on the shelf or the beautiful carpet or whatever it is, just so I can see, you know, gauge somebody's temperature. If they're relaxed, they can flash me a smile. They can give me an answer and talk to me. I'm moving forward into insurance. On the other hand, if they're not very nice, if they're closed up, then I'm going to spend a little bit more time trying to chat about the weather or whatever it is, before I move forward. So How I go about finding out the reason they'd sent it in is just finding out what their current situation is. So, because I can find out what their need is, and they might not know that that's their need. So if I were to ask them, what's the reason you'd sent the card in, you know, they might not think they need extra coverage, so they're not going to say that. But if I ask them what they have in place already, I can make that decision if they need extra coverage or if they're adequately covered or if they need coverage, you know, for other things or whatever it is. So the first thing that I ask is, you know, what do you have in place already as far as funeral expenses, final expenses goes? That's really, that one question right there is going to set the direction of your whole presentation. And then also let you know, I guess, what you're up against. So, and you can head off in a few different directions from there. So obviously the first answer that you can get from that is, I don't have anything. Okay. So that tells us we're starting at square one. You know, we're telling them why that's a problem and how we're going to fix it for them. Okay. So if somebody says to me, I don't have anything in place, the first thing that comes out of my mouth is, well, that's exactly what our program is designed for. I can see why you would have sent the card in. Okay. The next answer I can get when I say, what do you have in place already? They might say, I have a $10,000 policy to cover that. I've got it taken care of. Or they might say, I have a $5,000 policy, but I know that's not enough, or whatever it is. So if they mention any kind of other coverage, you know, then I'm just, the first thing out of my mouth is, that's exactly what our program is designed for. So if they say, yeah, I got a $10,000 burial policy, my funeral's covered. Well, that's exactly what our program is designed for, because our program doesn't pay directly to the funeral home. What our program does is allows you to set up a cash benefit that's paid out to your family when you pass to cover all the expenses outside of the funeral home, whether it be your final utility bills around the house, whether it be food for a family get together, you know, if it's cleanup costs to get ready to sell the house, maybe the grandkids need help, you know, getting the flight in so they can actually attend your funeral. Your son or your daughter is going to have to take time off of work to settle your estate. So just making sure that they're not put in the hole by having to miss work for, you know, a week to come out here to Missouri and take care of your estate. Our program provides money to your family, not to the funeral home. Another response I can get is, I don't have anything for funeral expenses. You know, I've got a $15,000 life insurance policy, but I don't have a burial policy. Perfect. That's what our program is designed for. You've got your burial policy, so your funeral's taken care of. We don't have to worry about your funeral at all. Okay? This is going to provide your family with the money to take care of these things. Or, so they've got life insurance. They don't have anything for their funeral. Perfect. That's exactly what our program is designed for. You set that life insurance up to take care of your family. You wanted to make sure you left your spouse or your son or daughter or your grandkids. So that money that you have, that life insurance that you have, is for your family. What our program is a burial policy. It's there to take care of your funeral expenses. So the $15,000 life insurance you have right now, if you go and eat up 10, 12,000 of it, heck, maybe even the full 15,000 of it for your funeral expenses, well, now you have no life insurance there to leave for your family. So you didn't really accomplish that goal that you were looking for. Okay, so what our program is designed for is to take care of the funeral expenses so all your life insurance can still be passed on to your family as a legacy like you intended it when you took it out. Okay. So, I mean, those are just kind of some of the possible answers that I can get. But once again, rather than why did you send this card in, I like to ask, what do you have in place already? Your ending point's usually going to be the same. You know, you're going to come to the same point of finding out what's in place and what's needed. It's just kind of a different way to get there. Another thing that, you know, if you're visiting with a couple, with a husband and a wife, again, they can give you some different answers to that question. What I always like to make sure I bring back up is how important it is being that they're both alive right now. So, yeah, you know, so you're visiting with a husband and a wife. Yeah, we've each got a $10,000 policy. Great. Well, that's exactly what our program is designed for. Because, you know, it's even more important being that you're both here and you're both still alive. Because when we talk about funeral expenses, you know, it's something that's a lot smarter to take care of while you're both here and you're both still alive. And what I mean by that is right now you're both getting Social Security income, correct? So you're getting two checks a month, correct? Yep. And I'm going to assume that it takes every penny of that for you guys to make it through the month, right? Correct? Yep, that's correct.
I can do that upstairs, okay?
Put me out of my misery.
Okay, so I muted that. You guys can unmute yourselves at any time. I'm not trying to cut anybody out, just get rid of background noise. So so it's taken every penny of that for you guys to make it through the month right now. Yep, that's correct. Well, let's fast forward, you know, 6 years from now and Mr. Smith passes away. So Mrs. Smith, not only are you going to have a $10,000 funeral bill in your lap, but you're also going to lose one of those Social Security checks, the smaller one, okay? So if it was taking two checks to get through the month before, and now not only do you have to pay for a $10,000 funeral, but you still got to make the monthly bills every month on essentially half the income you had before, right? Because your rent's not going to change, or if they are homeowners, your property taxes aren't going to change, your utilities aren't going to change, you know, the groceries probably ain't going to go down much. All your expenses are still going to be there, except you're going to have to meet that obligation on half of the income that you had when Mr. Smith was still alive. So it makes a lot more sense for you guys to account for that funeral expense now while you're both contributing and while you can both be here to take care of it than one or the other having to take care of it by yourself when the time comes. So again, that's just kind of a direction when visiting with a husband and wife. You know, presenting to couples is, I say it's got its pluses and its minuses. Obviously, visiting with two people at once, you double your chances of objections. You also subject yourself to groupthink, meaning that, you know, you might have sold either one of them by themselves, easy as could be, but when they get together and one of them's thinking, yeah, that sounds pretty good, but as soon as the husband goes, well, I don't really think that that's something we need, and the wife's like, yeah, we don't need it, you're right. So that groupthink is something. So to counteract that, if you're visiting with a couple, you have to make sure that you also play that to your strength, as in, you know, Mr. Smith, you're going to leave her behind. You know, you get a chance to decide right here today if you're going to leave her with a big burden or if you're going to have things taken care of for her. So you have to make sure that you play the positives of presenting to a couple as well to counteract the negatives of it. Then a little bit extra on that. So when I ask that question, what do you have in place already? If part of that answer has anything to do with other coverage, with existing coverage, I want to make sure that they go get that policy right now and lay it out on the table in front of us. So the first thing I'll do, if they say, yeah, I've got a $10,000 policy already, wonderful. So I don't try to make that a negative or try to combat against that or anything like that. So if they have a $10,000 policy, wonderful. Who do you have that through? That question right there tells me a lot, because I know, as a lot of you do, or you will before long, that if they say something like AARP, Colonial Penn, Lincoln Heritage, that those are all policies that I'm going to replace, because they're in 99 times out of 100, I can put them in a much better situation than what they have. So I'm going to ask, who do you have that with? The next question I'm going to ask, if they've got coverage already, is how long have you had that for? Because, you know, if it's something that's fairly recent, then there's a lot better chance of it being replaced. If it's something that they say I've had it for 20 years or 15 years, There's a lot better chances that it's going to be a term policy or a universal life policy, or if it is whole life, you know, that they have cash value in it that we can look at converting for them. So those are questions that I'm going to ask. And then the next thing I'm going to tell them to do, I'm not going to ask them to do it. I'm going to say, well, go grab that policy real quick so I can review it for you. And then as soon as I say that, I'm putting my head down and I'm scribbling in my notebook. So, because usually if you just tell somebody, go grab that policy, they're going to go grab it. On the other hand, if you say, do you have that policy handy? Then they're going to say, no, it's buried away somewhere. Or they're going to say, no, I gave it to my daughter, or something like that. So I'm just going to tell them, go grab that policy real quick so I can review it for you. And usually you're going to get a affirmative response out of that. They're going to go grab it and lay it down for you. For you guys that are newer, joining with us, when somebody goes and gets their policy, the first thing you want to do is look at page 3, which is the policy schedule or the policy data page. That's going to tell you, number one, what kind of policy it is, if it's whole life, if it's term, if it's universal. And then number two, it's going to give you the face and the premium and everything else. You know, usually if somebody pulls out a term policy, you've got a very good chance that you're going to replace that with a whole life policy. You know, usually if you can just show them, hey, this policy is going to, you know, kick you out when you turn 70, or, you know, you've got 6 years left on this till this coverage kicks you out, you're going to be able to replace that. If you just simply ask people what they have and don't make them go get the policy, you'll find most people don't have a clue what they have, or they think they know what they have, but they don't. Somebody might say, yeah, I got a $25,000 policy, and they go get it, and it's actually $5,000, you know, with $20,000 accidental death on it or something like that. Or they say, yeah, it's whole life. It's that kind that covers you forever, and you go get it, and it's a term policy. So usually the majority of the time, people are going to be incorrect about what they tell you they have. And that sounds kind of crazy for you guys that are just getting into the final expense business, but trust me, most people don't know what they have. So at the very worst case scenario, from our perspective, if they pull the policy out and you're not able to make a sale, you're not able to help them out because they've got things taken care of, at least they'll know that. Because, like I said, most people don't know what they have. As far as our options on when there's existing coverage, as far as replacing coverage, as far as, you know, accessing cash value on a policy they've had, I mean, that's kind of another conference call conversation, because we could spend a whole hour talking about different things to do there. So I don't necessarily want to gloss over that, but if you have questions on policies that you're up against, the existing coverage, what they can do as far as surrendering for cash value or rolling into a new policy and stuff like that, give me a holler. So back to the presentation. I will pause. Again, I ramble, but I'll pause real quick. Does anybody have any questions, concerns, anything they want to add to that or expand on?
I have a question.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
All right, this is Greg. Is there anybody on the line that could talk a little bit about their experiences with selling over the phone rather than setting appointments?
Yeah, don't do it.
Okay, there's a good answer.
So that's Ryan, I believe, in Denver, Colorado. So if you're looking for regional differences, is Tony Henry on here? No, I saw a Minnesota number. That must be Bill Petka. Final expense sales on the phone is kind of a, I don't want to say a mystery, because it's done. I mean, there is organizations that do it. What you'll find, though, Greg, is that you really have to be one or the other. The guys that do well selling over the phone or for final expense are usually in call centers with leads, live, real-time leads fed to them one after another. What I can tell you, a true phone approach in direct mail won't work. You would need 100 direct mail leads a week to try to do it over the phone because your closing ratio would be much, much lower.
Okay, I got it.
Yep. And another thing, just with our demographic, the retention, the persistency becomes a huge issue when selling over the phone compared to, selling in your regional vicinity and selling face-to-face with people. So, like I said, I'm not telling you that it's impossible because I know it's done, but it's usually in call centers and it's guys that they're usually either one or the other. Either they go to work in a call center with leads fed to them or they're out more face-to-face agents.
Okay. I accept that.
Yep. And the other thing too, though, to keep in mind on that is, we have carriers that we can do over the phone. So say you're working and you get a referral that lives on the other side of Virginia, but they want cover. My sister, she lives way over in the western edge of Virginia, but she wants coverage. You can call her up, and we've got multiple carriers that you can actually do an app for her on the phone. So we have the ability to do that. It's just the actual marketing that method is a completely different thing.
Okay.
So anybody else?
Yeah, Matt, this is Mike. How are you?
Good, Mike. How are you today?
I'm good. I mean, the first thing you said when you started your presentation is the opposite of what I'm doing. So obviously I need improvement because I thought, and what I've seen different training tell me, Mrs. Jones, why did you send in the card? What was your reasoning? And, what I found is what you said exactly. About a third of those answers are like, oh, I wanted information. Oh, I didn't know what it was. And then I'm fishing around to get her on point. But you go right from the start saying, hey, tell me, Mrs. Jones, what do you have in place right now to pay for your final expenses? I mean, you're there. So I appreciate that.
Yeah. And like I said, the three reasons and what was the reason you'd send it in and things like that. There's a lot of guys that have success with that. So I don't try to, downplay anybody else. Like I said, whatever, if it works for you, do it. But like I said, through the years, cause I've tried all those kinds of things. And through the years, what I've found the best method is instead of asking you the reason, I'm going to find the reason. I'm a trained professional. This is what I'm licensed to do. This is what I'm trained to do. So I am going to find the reason you'd send it in rather than let you try to tell me what it is. And by asking those key points, that's how I'm going to do that. And then I figure out, what direction we need to head. So, and like I said, I think it's big too to eliminate that easy out of I just wanted information. And that's not to say that's not going to come up later or when you go to close, it's not going to be an objection that comes up because it very well could be. But I just don't want to derail the whole process from the beginning by giving you that easy option to throw that in there. So anybody else? Okay. Well, I'll just kind of move on. Last year when we tried to get specifics into presentations, that same thing happened. We spent 45 minutes and we didn't get too far into it. So what we'll plan on continuing this, we'll go ahead and use our hour up today and then we'll plan on continuing it next week. So the next step, so you figured out where they're at. So you've really kind of figured their reason. So they don't have anything. So we're talking about paying for a funeral, or they've told you they got their funeral paid for. So we're talking about, final expenses, not just the funeral, but all those other bills that their family's going to have when they pass. Or they've got a policy and it's not enough. So we're talking about additional coverage. Okay. So that just, I've asked those questions. It's got me the direction I need to figure out how I need to approach this. The next thing is really presenting the problem. Now, a lot of this people will present for you if you're asking the right questions up front. So again, what do you have in place for funeral expenses already? Oh, I don't have anything. And my brother-in-law passed away, you know, 4 months ago, and it cost my sister, you know, $15,000, and she didn't have it. So she was trying to beg for money from the family, or, you know, whatever it is. But when you're asking those right questions from the beginning, a lot of times people set your stage for you. They present the problem to you. Okay. Let's say somebody didn't present that problem to me. So I didn't get anything like that. I don't have a whole lot of direction, but they told me they don't have anything in place. The next thing that I'm going to ask for from them is, who will be in charge of your funeral expenses when you pass away? So it's usually spouse, son, daughter, sometimes grandkids. Every now and then it's going to be my neighbor or something like that. But I want to find out who that person is, because then from what we do from here on out is directed towards them. So you know, it's my daughter, Samantha. Okay. So I know that Samantha is the one that that burden is going to be on. So that's where I'm putting this presentation, is towards Samantha. I don't do a whole lot else with Samantha at this point, but I at least want to know who she is. So, again, if people haven't presented the problem to me, now I got to go in and I got to be an educator. I got to be a teacher. So I ask, have you had to take care of any funerals lately? Are you aware of what they're running these days? Again, if they have had those experiences, they're going to start setting the stage and making yourself for you. They haven't. So they say, no, I haven't ever had to take care of a funeral. Say, okay. Well, just to give you a little bit of insight on that, you know, we get estimates every year from the National Funeral Directors Association. And right now in the state of Missouri, the average funeral is $8,624. Okay. Now that's just an average, and that can vary. If your, you know, family's super conscious about it and they try to just do the least possible, you know, they might get out of there closer to 6,000. Now, on the other hand, if they start upgrading things, have an extended service, upgrade the casket, more flowers, longer visitation, you know, they could easily be at 12 and 15,000. Okay. Now, Mrs. Smith, wouldn't you agree with me that it really doesn't matter if we're talking about $6,000 or we're talking about $15,000? That is a lot of money. And I've never had anybody disagree with me on that. Everybody, yes, that's a lot of money. Okay. And the next thing I'll add to that, you know, if you don't have it, you know, $6,000 might as well be 6 million. If you don't have 6,000, you know, it's all something that you can't afford. So with that in mind, what our program does is allows you a way to take care of that expense ahead of time while you're still living and while you still have an income coming in. So that's not a financial burden back on Samantha when you pass away. Okay. Now, I know you're like most mothers that I visit with. That's your one concern. You just don't want to leave a financial burden on Samantha when you pass. You know, you don't want Samantha's last thought of mom being that $12,000 funeral that she had to go in debt for, or she had to take a loan out for, or that she's still making payments on 6 months later. Okay. And that's what our program is designed for. It allows you to take care of it ahead of time and make sure that burden's not on Samantha. So, again, as part of that, with a husband and wife, that's huge. You know, if you explain that process of losing a check, income being cut in half, and then, you know, what that's going to do to a surviving spouse, that's huge. Another thing when it comes to husband and wife, usually with a husband and wife, you have a higher chance of seeing some coverage in place. You know, whether it's a $10,000 policy they kept as part of their pension, or they each have a $5,000 policy or something like that. Something I like to talk about with husbands and wives is, you know, transition money, because it's something that a lot of times they don't think of. So husband and wife, they each got a $10,000 policy. We don't need your services, Mr. Kuhn. We've got this taken care of. So we step back and we take a look at it. So yeah, you've each got a $10,000 policy. And if, you know, she walks into the funeral home tomorrow because you died, there's no reason she shouldn't be able to take care of your funeral with that. You're absolutely correct. But what our program is designed for is to provide her transition money. So as we talked about, her income's going to drop, her expenses are going to stay the same. Okay. So it's important to have a benefit just to take care of that. Okay. Let's say her living expenses are $1,000 a month. Okay. So even if you had a $20,000 policy, she spent 10 of it on your funeral. There's 10 left over. That's only 10 months of living expenses that you've left for her. That's not a whole lot. Okay. And what we really want to try to do is make sure that, you know, Mr. Smith, when you pass away, we want to make sure that your wife at least has enough transition money to figure out what direction she needs to take. So it's pretty obvious she's not going to be able to stay in this house, you know, taxes, rent, whatever it may be. Okay. Now, if you don't at least provide her some transition money, she's going to be forced. She's going to have about 30 days to make up her mind if she wants to stay in the house, if she wants to move to an apartment, if she wants to get a smaller house. Okay. This is a lot of times, you know, we always hear people talk about you don't want to make important decisions, you know, right after somebody passes away. This is why people are forced to make important decisions, because they don't have that transition money to figure things out. So if you've got your $10,000 policy to take care of your funeral, you know, you should at least think about providing her 1 year, $12,000, 1 year of transition money, so she can figure out what she's got to do to take care of herself from this point forward. I think that's very effective when you're visiting with a husband and wife, even though they think that, you know, they've got a burial policy, they got their funeral expenses taken care of, providing transition money for the surviving spouse. So that's kind of, you know, explaining the problem. Your extent in that is going to rely heavily on where they're at in the process or what they've told you already. Because again, some people will set the stage and present the problem for you. Some people, you got to start with square one and help them recognize there's a problem. When we get into,
yep, that was exactly the sale I had yesterday for that older couple that I called you from, because I had a question with UP1. That was exactly what I did, what you just said. Worked wonderfully.
On transition money?
Yeah, gives them time to evaluate their future, because they're going to be all emotionally shook up and they're not going to know which way to go. And should they move in with the kids? Should they get a smaller place? You know, they're all a ball of emotion, and it takes, you know, for some people 3 to 6 months to unwind that emotion and financially, you know, wake up and get out of that trance after someone dies to be able to make the decisions. So this buys them a little time, and it's not financially making decisions, snap decisions. They're making thought out decisions. And that was exactly what I used.
Yeah, absolutely. And I tell you something, you know, you hear guys talking about final expense, life insurance in general, final expense being an emotional sale. You got to elicit emotion and this and that. And, you know, picture your husband in a casket and, you know, you know, picture your wife standing over your casket, worrying about how she's going to pay that bill today, you know, things like that. I'm not a huge emotional sell guy, but if you want to elicit emotion, if you're sitting down with a husband and wife, start talking about her next husband. Now that'll get emotion. So when you start talking about, you know, Mr. Smith, you know, what we've seen statistically is a lot of times, you know, once somebody is widowed, their next marriage ends in divorce a lot of times. OK, Okay. Because what happens is they're forced economically, they're forced to go out and find a partner because they can't afford the bills on their own. So they're forced very soon after their husband's passing to go out and find their next partner just so they've got somebody to share the bills with. So a lot of times these people are out, you know, looking for a partner because economically they have to. So they end up with the wrong partner. But what we're trying to do is prevent that. We're trying to make sure that transition money is there, that your wife has all the time she needs to figure things out and she's not forced to make decisions before she's ready to make those decisions. So,
yeah, because they had the funeral paid for and the cemetery. They had that taken care of like 15 years ago. And they sent in the card because they've been thinking about it. And, you know, that's really what they needed.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something too. As long as guys are,
if you have to explain some of these things to these,
as long as guys are ready to approach it from that standpoint, it can really be a positive for you selling to a couple. But it's when guys, you know, feel like they come up against a brick wall. It's like, oh, they've already got that taken care of. They've already paid for their funeral, whatever it is, that they start to struggle with that. So, what other questions? Anybody have anything they want to bring up? I'm going to stop right there just because it's a good stopping point. And then next week, look at continuing with the rest of our presentation, which would be, so we found out their current situation. We've presented the problem to them to make sure they know what that looks like. And then next week when we continue, we'll go into presenting the solution to them and then closing on it. So I've got a couple other things that I just wanted to throw out there. I mentioned at the beginning, our training site has all of this stuff. I mean, anything that you heard come out of my mouth today is in our final expense training manual. It's laid out there so you can read it, memorize it, do whatever you need to do with it. So again, that website is just our homepage. So paycenteradvantage.com/training. When you get on that, there's a little button that says online training, click on it. The password is agent-training. Again, shoot me an email if you need me to send that out to you because I'd be more than happy to do that. A few other things, just wanted to bring up again, sales incentives that are going on through our different carriers. Americo just wrapped up their bonus for final expense apps, which pretty much equated to $100 bonus per app. That just got over in March. You guys will get paid for that. I believe it's towards the middle of this month. Americo also has their cash bonus semi-annually, 8% cash bonus. You have to write $30,000 in 6 months. So if you equate that, if you're looking for a go-to carrier, Americo is a good option. $30,000 in 6 months, you're looking at $5,000 a month. That's not that tough to do. Just using it when it's a good fit, it's not that tough to do. But if you can do 30,000 within a 6 month period, you get an 8% bonus. Those periods run, this first one here was from December 1st, 2016. It ends at the end of May. Then they'll start a new one up June 1st. That'll end at the end of November. And then that bonus will be paid out, in like December 15th. So again, that's 8% cash bonus. Security National Life just finished a contest up to up your app. You just had to beat what your previous rolling average was for cash bonuses. Another thing I wanted to throw out there is don't forget about our lead co-op program, which is just the same as getting cash into your pocket, but you can earn a discount on your leads based on your previous month's production. Again, that's on our website. Just go to paysetteradvantage.com/incentives, and there's a flyer on there for our lead co-op program. But there's guys that are earning some nice bonuses just via discounts on leads, but that's cash right back in your pocket that you don't have to worry about getting 1099 on or anything else. And then also Security National Life's lead credit, their 10% credit. And most of you, you know, once you have a credit built up in there, I just reach out to you and ask, hey, do you want to apply that to your invoice? And we take care of that for you. So, other than that, one last time, anybody have any questions or anything they want to bring up? All right. Well, that's all I got. We'll continue next week with the rest of the presentation, solution details, closing, and all that. So other than that, I hope you guys have a great weekend. And if you have any questions, concerns, don't hesitate to reach out to me or Jerry, and we'll do whatever we can for you. So have a great weekend.
Thanks, Matt.
Yep. Take care.
Thanks again, Matt. Bye-bye.
See you, Mel.
Thanks, Matt.
Yep. Take care.
Okay.